Hi, welcome to the Gibbidgee podcast. I'm Ben, Gibbidgee COO, and for those of you who don't know who we are, we're fundraising experts who provide fundraising technology and consultative advice to organisations looking to raise more at events and online. 2020 is a very special year for us as we're celebrating 10 years since we started supporting charities. And so far, we have helped to raise over $550 million across the UK, Canada, USA, Hong Kong, and Australia. We're excited to share our fundraising best practices, tips, and tricks through this medium. So sit back and enjoy the show. In today's episode, we will be delving into the best ways to run a fund a need, also known as a pledge drive, in our new virtual environment. As more and more charities are now migrating to virtual events, getting key moments like a fund a need right is absolutely crucial. And given you've migrated your top donors and many more, we have invited Lane, the auctionista, to join us. Lane is our very own philanthrotainer and has supported over 1,000 charity events in recent years and has truly pivoted to virtual, with already supporting 10 events so far since COVID began and with many, many more to come. How are you doing, Lane?
Hey, I'm awesome today. Thank you, Ben, for inviting me.
You're very welcome. We're so pleased to have you with us. So first of all, let's go through philanthrotainer, because as we know, I have a bit of an issue saying that, but I feel like I've cracked it. What does philanthrotainer mean?
Well, you know, that's a title that I coined myself because I truly did not fully identify with the name auctioneer. And so philanthrotainer is a title that truly reflects my style of performance and my style of, well, I used to call it live charity fundraising. Now it's virtual as well. So to make it short and sweet, when you combine entertainment and philanthropy and inspire giving, then you have full-on engagement with your crowd. So that's kind of where we're coming from with that term. It's not in Merriam-Webster yet, but maybe it will be by the time I end my career. Who knows?
I think you're going to make it a worldwide thing. And I've seen you, Lane, in action. I can definitely get where philanthrotainer is going as well. So if you start with telling us your journey, how did you get into the fundraising sector?
Well, it was kind of completely by accident. It was completely by accident how I became a philanthrotainer. But, you know, prior to the world of the charity sector, I was a financial advisor. And we had a tragedy in our family. And I sought out the services of a charity for support and programming. And I will be completely honest with you, I didn't really understand that world. And the more involved I became in understanding that world, the more passionate I became about supporting that world. So it was completely by accident that about 12, 13 years ago, I went to my very first gala fundraising dinner. I truly didn't even know what a silent auction was, what a live auction was. I didn't even know what an auctioneer was. You know, I'm a European immigrant kid, and you know, anything that was done to support was done in a church basement. So I didn't have this broader view. So I went to this event and the auctioneer came to the podium, and I'm going to just say that I was jarred. I mean, I did not know then that there were so many strains and avenues of auctioneering. I didn't get that. I know now that the gentleman was doing the best he could, but he was a livestock auctioneer. And so that is his specialty. So, you know, I walked up to him afterwards and I said, how do I learn how to do this? And he said, you got to go figure it out because it's in my blood. I've been doing this for generations. So I just ventured on and tried to figure it out and went to auction school. And the rest is kind of history from there. And that's I'm celebrating 10 years this year as the auctioneista.
Wow. 10 whole years. Well, no, what a journey. And I think that's for a lot of people in fundraising, that can be a way in as well. You know, when you've gone through something personally and you've got involved in fundraising, you start to realize that there's this whole industry and all these people that operate to try and do good. So yeah, it's interesting to learn how you've got into it. And after 10 years, are you still absolutely loving it?
I am more passionate about it now, actually. I'm actually one of the weirdos probably that's like super excited about this shift. Of course I'm passionate about it. I love working with the charities. I love being a part of a team environment. I love performing. I love inspiring giving. I love a challenge. So if somebody says, Lane, we need to raise X amount of dollars, I'm up for that challenge and helping improve their bottom line. So I still got it, Ben. Like I'm telling you, I'm still there. I'm still on the trajectory upward, I think.
Well, I think you definitely are. Out of all the places I've been in the world and all of the people who do a similar role to you, I've never met anybody like you, especially the sheer energy that you put into the charities that you support. And I think for our listeners, something that, you know, just to explain as well, I know that you very much get on stage and you get involved. But, you know, when I met you, you know, I think at the start of this year or last year in Canada, it seemed like you get very involved with the charity. You don't just turn up on the night and do the job. Can you just explain a little bit more, you know, what is it you actually offer to charities?
Well, absolutely. Yeah. So that is definitely what I am not. I don't show up on event night, hand me a piece of paper and off I go. I mean, certainly I can do that. I've got a lot of experience behind me. That's not how I prefer to do things. And that doesn't allow for the best possible fundraising outcome for the charity. It doesn't allow for the best guest experience either. So typically I'm working with my clients 6 months at least, and sometimes longer out from event day. And we are really drilling down into the revenue aspect of their event. Certainly I involve myself with run of show and where the fundraising component should sit within that run of show, but we are digging deep around reviewing historical data, what's worked, what hasn't worked, what's on trend, how the stories of the fund and need should be told, how they should be presented, who should be speaking, how we're going to make that incredibly important Cause Connect moment come to life and inspire and motivate others to get on board. So as much as I am a live performer, I'm very much what I call a revenue strategist, a consultant. I know how to raise money. I know how to do it. And it's a lot of it is data-driven information. Yeah. And I can really help clients achieve their goals. And I'm super proud of that. So I love working with teams that are ready for that kind of relationship with their philanthrotainer.
I think what you can tell with you as well is because of where you actually started in finance, you can see how you look at it as a kind of like a business plan in a way is what, how can we get the absolute most from an event? And I think that's something really important because I've been in the industry similar time to yourself. And I've worked with so many people who just rock up on stage and they, you know, auction a few items and they run off and you go, no, well, you did a pledge or you do this and you can see it's just not of interest. And I think the best, you know, hosts that I've ever worked with are ones like yourself who deep dive, actually go, you know, look at your event as kind of like a business. How can we get the most from this and also have an epic event? And I think that's where you're really piecing that all together for charities.
Well, thank you for that. And, you know, after I got involved with the charity for personal reasons, I actually left my financier corporate in the dust and I became a director of development over time. So I have frontline fundraising experience as a D of D in the healthcare sector and the arts and culture sector. So I really bring like this really kind of very unique point of view, understanding that, you know, the charity has, you know, their VIPs, their donors. This is about stewardship as well. So really acting as a extension of that charity's brand, understanding their cause, being an ambassador on event night, and really helping that charity develop deeper, more meaningful relationships with the folks in the audience during my fundraising session.
Love it. Well, this leads us on to the topic of our podcast, because now we know your credentials. I think it's going to really help charities understand our next segment, which is to really try and delve into the fund a need. And as I said, for our UK clients or other regions, it's also known as a pledge drive. Now, you know, myself included, we are seeing lots and lots and lots of virtual events, and Lane has already supported over 10 events so far and many, many more to come. So I suppose the first question is, why do you feel, Lane, that a fund in need is such a critical component of a virtual gala?
Well, just as it is in a live event, Ben, it should be positioned as the pinnacle. It's the showcase. It is the cause connect moment for your viewers. It's awareness building. And now on this virtual platform, in this new space, in this new format, there are actually the opportunity to engage viewers beyond the 500 ticket holders that you had the previous year in your live event. So now more than ever, it's crucial to speak to the why, the impact, and really showcase your cause and inspire folks to get on board. Of course, in a virtual setting, you know, maintaining viewership is key, right? So, you know, we are seeing now this more creative aspect about, you know, how to create these powerful images, these videos that are succinct and clearly communicating the why and the impact. So that all bends to the importance of the mission, right? Again, you know, it's about the donor acquisition piece. You've got a wider, broader audience, and this is your moment to really build that donor database in a much more profound way. It's also an opportunity. Let's face it, bottom line is not everybody's going to walk away with a live auction item or an online auction item. We want to make sure that we give folks the opportunity to contribute, to be a part of that moment, and to financially support the cause. It's also about stewardship as well, right? The more data you collect, the more gifts you get, the more opportunities you have to steward them. As I always say, and this is going to be super direct, Ben, and you know that's how I am.
Always.
You can't really steward effectively a green and blue and red Afghan from an online auction, but you can very effectively steward a $25 donation, right? So really, I mean, to me, it should be the focus, and I think there's just an incredible opportunity. So, you know, it's time to break the status quo a little bit around the fund in need when it comes to virtual.
Yeah, and you know what? I couldn't agree more. I think when, you know, from all around the world, all the charities I've spoken to, everyone always focuses on the you know, the 10 to 20% in the room when we do the live events. And I've always said to charities, there's so much more out there, but we always focus on these really cool, exciting items or these big hitters that all drop $10,000. And, you know, one thing that we found in the last 6 months is that pledging through our platform on virtual events is up by about 60 to 70%. Which is phenomenal. And I think that's now where everyone's switching on and going, oh, okay. So actually we could ask everybody and they might all give something and we'll probably raise more. It's like a light bulb moment has just happened around the world.
And you're so right. You know, and one of the phrases that I use when I'm facilitating the fund in need is, let's pool our resources. Every dollar makes a difference, right? The 25s, the hundreds, the 1000s. And, you know, and I'm actually seeing what you're speaking to around the lift in pledges and virtual galas. I mean, you know, I'm very involved with the Givergy team here in Canada, and we've experienced phenomenal success. And I'm really excited because guess what? These charities are adopting. There are many charities that were not using fundraising technology, Ben, and they are adopting it now because they have to. They can't raise money otherwise. And so what's kind of exciting for me is, yay, that's their light bulb moment, because they're saying, if we go back to in person, we will continue using this. So that's like they're getting rid of the landline. They're getting rid of the cable TV mentality, and now they're finally here. They've arrived in the 21st century, and they're realizing the massive effect of fundraising technology in a virtual space.
Couldn't agree more. So what would you say are some ways in which a charity can effectively communicate their cause or their message during a virtual gala to really inspire people, you know, to actually give during the event?
Yeah, well, I think it actually begins before the event, and that is really being clear on your message, really being clear with your ask. Priming your audience is critical. So I would say the communication strategy in advance of the virtual gala is an extremely important time investment. Making sure that these viewers understand why they're there, what they're investing in, and that they will be asked for a direct donation, right? So I believe that the communication marketing and communication plan in advance is critical. The other way that they can effectively communicate their cause is by obviously selecting the right kind of speakers whose stories will underpin the ask. We talked about video at the top of the show here. Now is the time to be creative. You know, those regurgitated PSAs, let's flip those on their ear. It's time to topple the status quo. We know that viewership can wane very quickly in a virtual gala environment. So those videos, those 2-minute videos, must be crafted. They must be scripted. They must be storyboarded. They must be shared. Your philanthropist, your auctioneer has got to understand and hear those stories and be a part of those stories in advance so that they can effectively articulate the ask and refer back to those stories when we're doing the pledge drive. So, you know, strong imagery, strong videos, strong marketing communication plan, a strong facilitator, and craft it all. Don't just do it off the cuff, obviously. You know, never. So now is the time to really get creative.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and I think to add around this as well is from the many galas that I've watched online now, it's also making sure that you set the event up so that people know you are going to ask. Because yeah. I keep attending events and I'm like, I'm 45 minutes in and I still haven't been asked to give or even how to get on the platform to register, to kind of make an ask. And I think that's the thing is, I think charities, you know, trying to do these virtual galas are sometimes making them quite long as well and want to play so much content of like an interview here and a meeting there. Where I think we have to also remember that, you know, you probably only get these people to tune in for like 45 minutes to an hour maximum. And you need to go, actually, thank you so much for coming. Get that epic video, but remind them, we actually want you to give tonight. And that's something I keep seeing is they're not, but you know, we're getting so far in. And by that point, you see the numbers drop and they've right. gone by the time we've said, actually, we would like you to give some money.
So the way that I'm working with my clients is in developing our run of show is, you know, in a live event, Ben, you know, typically there's, it's formatted. You arrive, you cocktail, you dine. You know, live auction, pledge drive, then you party. That's great, over 5 hours. But like you said, you know, the sweet spot, I agree with you, is about a 45-minute show. And I'm doing at least 2 pledge drives in that time. So forget this one only, because you're going to have people coming and going. They're going to be in the show, maybe going to mix some beverages for guests or whatever. So, yeah. And you also have to remember that different storytelling may resonate with different folks. You know, you're really trying to mirror the audience and connect with them and build empathy and trust. So, you know, taking 2 different types of stories and adding those into the program. And you know what? I'll be even as bold to say I'm going into a 3 appeal virtual gala soon. So we are really bringing that story home in the why and really connecting people. So.
You're definitely going for it.
Yep.
And what would you say are the new challenges, you know, in terms of what could really hold a charity back from really trying to hit their goals when it comes to a virtual gala and a fund and aid?
Yeah, so I'm going to say viewership is one of the most important factors. You know, no matter how skilled, you know, your professional fundraising host is, if I have 9 people viewing the show, there is no magic that I can do to make $50,000, right? Or $100,000. So, you know, I think that, again, you know, the pre-planning and the audience development piece is critical. You need eyeballs. You need registrations. You need the folks on board. And there are multiple strategies to encourage viewership, whether it's through watch parties or whatever other means. But certainly an audience development committee is key. I also believe that the lack of pre-committed gifts will also may not help you reach your goal. We know that when we have pre-committed gifts in a live event and folks are raising their paddle, they're bidding on the platform, I'm calling out names, I'm calling out donations, this motivates other people to follow suit. In a live event, Ben, when you're sitting at a table of 10, there is that positive peer pressure. People are raising paddles. Yeah. They're using the platform. They're on their phones. And, you know, nobody wants to be upstaged. We know that everybody that walks through the door is able to give a gift, whether it's a $20 gift or a $2,000 gift, whatever's meaningful for them. In a virtual space, you may be watching alone at home or with your partner at home. You're not feeling that sense of urgency possibly, or that peer pressure. So those pre-committed gifts that I know are going to come up on the screen and I know I'm going to be calling them out, that will help drive that totalizer, but it also drives motivation. So I think that that is really critical. And I'm still going to go back, you know, to that. If you have a weak communications plan and you haven't set yourself up and primed your audience, you know, that's going to work against you as well. Also, not going after a matching gift, that's also going to slow things down very, very much. So, you know, we're really finding that these key conversations that are happening pre-event with corporate matches and pre-commits are incredibly critical to the overall success of the Fund a Need.
Well, this kind of leads on, because I know we're talking a lot really about the pre-event side. I know for a live event, I think what the difference is when we do these live events, you know, charities are doing them every year or biannually, and you're planning them really for a whole year or even 6 months before. Right now, you know, we're seeing charities pivot to these virtual galas, and they happen to plan them within 2 weeks or 3 or 4 weeks. So it's, I'm on the calls all the time. You can feel the pressure, but everyone's doing really, really well. But what do you think is different? If you can give advice to a charity that's sitting there at the moment thinking, wow, okay, I'm back. I need to fundraise, and I think we need to do a virtual gala. What kind of strategies do you think they need to put in place to make that happen and get across what you're saying?
Yeah, well, you know, here's the thing is you have to lean on your professionals, on your professional partners. I have found, Ben, that yes, I am absolutely stepping into this type of situation where a charity is like, Lane, we've got a month and this is what we need to do with the fundraising aspect. So I'm also talking to my technical partners and they're feeling the same sense of urgency. So, you know, what we're all doing in the industry now is we're doing double, triple, quadruple duty. We're all learning. We're all having to pivot very quickly. And we're all having to, you know, support in a deeper way in a shorter period of time. So, you know, honestly, for me, for the fundraising aspect, you know, having that fundraising technology is key. And making sure that folks are registered. We need those viewers. And also, you know, when it comes to the Fund a Need, again, I can't express enough the critical nature of, you know, getting those pre-commits on board. So it's quick turnaround time. And I'm going to say something that, you know, in the early stages, there was a lot of conversation around adjusting your budget when you switch to virtual. A pair back, you're not going to make as much in a live auction. You're not going to do as well in a Fund a Need. But what we're seeing, and you've expressed earlier on in the show, is that people understand the critical need that charities have right now for donations. People want to support and they want to do what they can. So, you know, leverage everyone around you, your sponsors, leverage their networks, get them on doing a 30-second promo, get them sharing within their personal and professional networks. You know, leverage everyone that you know to get on board and support.
And you know what, this kind of leads on to an example I keep giving at the moment to charities is, We have a charity over here in the UK, and their event normally attracts about 150 people in a gala event. And it's beautiful, and it happens every year, and it raises a great amount of money. And they were, to be honest, they were very early on in the whole let's switch. And they did it, but they did something really unique. They actually merged with another charity. Because what they had is they had a resource issue. Because they had virtually, you know, because of furlough and the various things that all constraints were in, there were like two people at this charity and actually two people at a charity that they both were raising money for the same thing. And they joined forces. And what was interesting is they said to us, well, we're going to invite 150. And we was like, but we know you've got a massive database of people. And you also have a really powerful Twitter account. So in the end, they opened it up, they merged together, they asked everyone to ask everyone, ask a friend, ask the sponsors, ask the board members. And they actually managed to get just over 800 people to tune in. And between the two of them, I think, let's just say they raise about 80 grand between the two of them a year on these two events. They raise over 150,000. And we're seeing more charities think like that, like you say, ask everyone. But also, you might be able to join forces, because I know resource for people is not the same as it was 6 months ago.
So this leads me into a good news story about combining forces. I would say that, and I have to be careful how I say this, but my perfect virtual gala was with the Georgian Bay Hospital Foundation. And what they did this year is they merged two events. They typically did one in the summer, an outdoor event, and then they did a typical in-person gala in the fall. And what they did is they combined those two committees. They combined the budgets. Typically, those two events would raise around $250,000, but the costs were very high, right? You know, decor and all of that matter. But what we ended up having was an incredibly large and committed committee. We had 10 on one side, 10 on the other, and they joined forces, and we just rolled up our sleeves. And in the end, Ben, we raised $307,000 with a fundraising expense ratio of, are you ready for this? 18%.
Wow.
Their ROI was off the charts. So this really speaks to the power of community, to the power of many. Many folks make light work, is that the expression? But really, you know, talking it up, building the buzz, getting people excited, and another success story of combining forces. So really
no,
great.
I love it. It's similar to an event. We've got a really exciting event coming up in 2 weeks. It's in Asia Pacific. I can't say the name of the charity, but they were the same. They're joining five events from five countries together because the time zone is so similar. And we're actually doing five fundraising sites in five currencies, all merged into this one massive power event. And we're like, it's a test for us as well. It's going to be absolutely amazing. But they're like, we need to join forces because, as well, like, you know, you're only going to get your donors' attention once. So they're like, let's do it. So I love that as well.
Oh, that's brilliant. I need to get the link for that because I think that is a global village, right? I mean, 100%. The epitome of, wow, that's really, really inspiring.
And what's cool is the countries because it's Hong Kong, Singapore, Australia, Japan, and I think India are joining as well. So it's such a big group of people.
It just, in Ben Crook's words, it's going to be epic.
No, absolutely. Okay, so let's move on to our next question. So how do you, as let's call it a philanthrotainer, but aka, you know, a fundraising host, auctioneer, how do you leverage Givergy in this in terms of, you know, using our technology to include it within the actual virtual event?
Okay, again, it starts pre-event for me. As you know, I'm very connected to the Givergy team here in Canada, and I understand the platform. I wouldn't say totally inside out, but I understand it well enough that I can also be a support for my client. In terms of preparing for the event, I always set up a call with the Givergy team and the client to review, especially for when we're talking about the pledge drive, of course, the live auction as well, but the pledge drive as well. making sure that we are set up for success. So what does that mean? That means that if we have that corporate match donor, they're not going to be adding their $50,000 gift to the credit card that night. So what we can do is we have the capability with your platform to preload that amount. So when I start the fundraising, I can say, you know, ABC Insurance Company is a hero tonight. They are kicking us off. And I know that my Givergy team is going to have me poised and ready. They're going to have that pre-committed donation set and ready to go. So when I say that, I'm going to see that come up on the screen. I'm going to give that shout out, and we're going to get off to a very quick start with our fundraising. So that's a very important piece. The other piece is obviously there's always that conversation with charities. Well, so many of the donors don't want to have their pledge recognized, and some do. I am telling you right now, as a professional fundraising auctioneer, it is critical to have those donor names up on the screen. And I will tell you that this is one of the post-event questions that we pose in surveys is, how did you feel about the names popping up? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you, even though there are fears pre-event, the reality is, Ben, is that people, viewers, participants love seeing that. They love to see that their friends are on board. We're not sitting in the room together. We can't see each other from across the table. So if I know that my best friend who is, you know, in BC is watching, and I see that name come up, this happened exactly the other night for me as I was doing fundraising. I saw a personal friend of mine, their name pop up with a donation. And, you know, there's much to celebrate, and it helps motivate. It helps people feel that they are not alone in this fundraising piece with a sea of anonymous donors. There's names, there's personalities, and there's connections out there.
And there's also, you know, let's be really honest, there's also the show-offs. You know, we've all been there, and, you know, all of our gala events that we all support, and a lot of people do like their name in lights. And also, especially if you have corporates there, you know, you see people bid, and then another person go, oh, well, if he's going to bid, here's my bid. Yep. So I think there's so many different reasons why, and I'm the same with you. I'm a big advocate, and get your name in lights. And hardly anyone goes anonymous at the end of the day. It's minimal, isn't it?
It's true. But the charities do have concerns. You know how it is.
Yeah.
The other thing I love about your team is responsive you are to this changing landscape. So, you know, I did an event last Thursday night, and you had already made enhancements for the live auction names and the Fun and Need names, that they were bolded and they were scrolling through, and it was fantastic. So that's another great way for me as a fundraiser to track those names, to call up those names again, to call those backup bidders and say, Mary, I know you're out there. I can still see you. Your bid is at X. Come on back to me, girl. Come on back to me. Look into my... So I love that you're responding to the needs and improving your platform. So, and these are very critical aspects for me as a fundraiser, right? I mean, I'm using that screen. It's my eyes, it's my ears, it's prompting me. So it has to be bang on.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. I think that's the thing with what we're all going through now. We're all having to react quicker than we've ever reacted before. So yeah, I think that's the thing, is taking the feedback on board, looking at the virtual event and thinking, okay, how can you progress it? And I think that's the same, not just for our technology. It's the same for when you're planning your virtual event. Is my advice is listen to what other people have to say. You know, listen to this podcast, look at blogs, and really speak to the fundraising consultants at Givergy, but also other charities that have done it. Because that's the thing, is that we've all kind of gone through the initial 6 months of, it was a little bit painful, to be honest, at times, when we all, you know, Zoomzilla and all the different things that we've all been through. And now we're getting to a point where I think the world's going, all right, virtual's probably here to stay for a while, so I need to make it work. And I just think that's something to really try and do, is listen to what everyone else has gone through, and so that you can have an even better event and not go through what other people have already gone through.
That's right. I agree with you.
So I suppose that kind of leads me on to the final question, which is, like I said, it is becoming really clear that for the time being, I think virtual events are going to be our norm. So what would you say, Lane, excites you about the future of fundraising in this environment? And a kind of second question is also hybrid. It's the question that's being thrown around all the time now is, you know, are hybrid events going to be becoming a thing as well? So I'd love to hear your view on both of those.
Right. So number one, Ben, I'm personally very excited. It's going to sound crazy, but this is shaking the foundation of everything. You know, every gala, cookie cutter, we know what's going to happen. And, you know, guests support 5, 7, 10 different charities. Every gala, the entertainment changes, the meal changes, but the format is pretty much the same. What I love about the place that we're at is we can topple the status quo right now. We can really dig into our creativity, create new best practices. You know, knowledge is power, right? You know, I spent days and hours on YouTube just watching all the different virtual event formats. And there is so much to learn. There is so much creativity out there. And as I said, kind of at the beginning of the show, is, you know, going from your typical one donation ask, and now in a 45-minute virtual event, I'm doing two asks, and folks are responding in both of those segments, and the money and the donations are driving forward. So this is really all very positive. Hybrid events, I did one last week with Givergy. Yep, it was with Givergy, and we had 50 people in the room, and it was great. And for me personally, being in a space where there were humans and I could interact with them, not beyond the line in the sand. I had my own little square to stand in, but there's an energy that comes with that, right? An interaction and you know, applause and the human element. So we don't know where we're going right now, but what we do know, and what I know for sure based on my experience in the dozen or so virtual events that I've done, and I've got about another dozen in the pipeline for this fall, they are raising money. Yeah. They are working. The technology is being embraced, the fundraising technology, which I'm excited about because, you know, I've been telling my clients for years, you got to get on board with this stuff. And now they finally are, and I'm excited about that. So it's this innovative fundraising technology, I truly believe, ensures the best fundraising result. And I love it. I love it. And I'm excited. I'm excited. You know, it's not going to be cookie cutter anymore. I'm hosting, I'm fundraising. One night it's a telethon, the other night it's a hybrid event, another night I'm in studio, another night I'm in my own home with a backdrop. So the creativity out there is phenomenal.
You sound like a news reporter.
Yes, you'll have to kind of cut me off. I'm really, as you can tell, I'm really pumped about it. I'm very optimistic about the future of fundraising. And I am going to say that the client that I referred to, the Georgian Bay Hospital Foundation, the Power of Giving Virtual Gala, they did all the right things, all the steps. No stone was not turned over and looked under. And when I challenged them for their pre-commits, their seed money, they gulped a little bit at first, but in the end, it drove us to success, and the executive director said, Lane, that was the best possible thing you could have said to us to challenge us, because the new donor acquisition throughout the process was off the charts. After the event was over, they had more folks coming towards them and saying, we want to be a part of this next year. People want to be a part of something that's successful, that's moving forward, and that's how it is. So it's great times.
It is
great times for us.
And this goes back to what I was saying a moment ago, is listen to these ideas and don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to get things in advance and get seed money and do all the things that we've talked about, because they are making virtual events a real success as well. And, you know, When you contact anyone at GiveAG, we do have lots of examples and videos of actual virtual gala events as well. So we'll try and share them with anyone that'd like to view them. But Lane, you have been truly amazing, as you always are every time I chat with you. And thank you so, so much for all the advice, because we've now run out of time. But I really hope you've enjoyed joining the GiveAG podcast.
Well, it's always great spending time with you. I love your energy. I love the view that you have on the state of fundraising. It's always great to chat about it, because we're moving forward, Ben. It's great times.
No, thank you. Well, Lane will also be joining our Facebook group, Fundraising During COVID-19, so you can keep the conversation going. If you would like to find out more about the Auctionista services, head over to www.auctionista.ca. I'm going to spell that for you. So that's AUCTIONISTA.ca. So auctionista.ca. You'll find many great resources and, of course, information on how Lane can support your next virtual event. But we really hope that you've enjoyed today's episode and found the content informative. And we'd really love to hear your thoughts. So please feel free to email podcast@giveag.com. And you can also make suggestions of future topics or guests that you would love to hear on our show. Thanks again. And don't forget to hit subscribe or follow to listen and look out for our next episode. Thank you.